ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
Learning a second language for people who grow up speaking English can be challenging. Think back to your high school French, German, or perhaps even Japanese lessons. So how difficult is it for a child who comes to this country speaking no English? Should they be encouraged to stop talking in their native language and focus entirely on becoming proficient in English? Or is there a better way to help students learn languages? On this edition of UWM Today, our topic is biliteracy, or learning two languages at the same time. Our guests are Tatiana Joseph, an assistant professor of teaching and learning and chair of UWM's second language education program. And with her, Leanne Evans, associate professor and chair of the early childhood education program in UWM's School of Education. Welcome, ladies. It's great to have both of you on today's program.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's wonderful because it's so neat to be able to talk to two women who have such deep experience helping particularly youngsters, although I think we'll learn it's not just youngsters, it's also some adults who really struggle with learning the language when they come to this country. Tatiana, let me begin with you. How common is it for students to come to school today without knowing English or any English at all?
It's very common, and it's something that we are seeing a growth across every school sector, public, private, rural, and suburban schooling. And as more and more families come into the United States, and they're more likely for their children to not speak English as proficient as they need to be. So for example, in MPS, Milwaukee Public Schools, 11% of their student population is categorized as English language learner. That's about 7,700 students in the district. So average, I tell my students it's not uncommon to have at least one English language learner with some proficiency level in their classroom. And so that's really the mindset that we go into as we prepare our students for teaching, understanding that you will have at least one in your classroom every single year, if not more, depending on the school sector, of course.
And Leanne, thinking about your role in the early childhood education program, helping tomorrow's teachers get ready for today, that's a real challenge, isn't it, for our students at UWM to brace themselves or prepare themselves for this experience of being in front of kids who don't understand or perhaps even speak much, if any, English.
Yeah, so we look at it less of a challenge and more of an opportunity to really approach our pedagogies from the place of where students come from. And we know that the linguistic talents of children, if we understand that and if we utilize the language orientations that kids come to school with, that they do so much better. And so for us in teacher education, we know that it's a tremendous opportunity for us to make sure that all children are getting the education and the approach to learning that is equitable based on cultures and language, and that moves them towards a trajectory of success, not just academically, but just lifelong. So we understand the importance of having our pre-service teachers leave us with the knowledge and skills and dispositions, because it's dispositional as well, that, you know, kids who come from homes that speak another language than English, we are going to use what we know about that to make sure that they get the most equitable and successful experience.
Tatiana, you talked about the fact that thousands of kids just in the Milwaukee public school system are walking in as English learners. I was surprised as I was preparing for today's program that those students come from homes with many different languages being spoken. We often think here in Milwaukee, we have a large Spanish population, which is adds to the wonderful richness and diverse nature of our community. But it is not just students who are coming from a Hispanic background, but we have students coming from countries with languages that I suspect not many adults speak here in the city.
Correct. I mean, we have, for example, one of the area high schools, South Division High School in Milwaukee, has 41 different languages spoken in the building. And so it's a, you know, it's a mini, I call it a United Nations.
Let me pause right there. 41 different languages spoken in just one of the schools?
Yes, in just one building. And that is not uncommon in an English, in an ESL classroom, for example, to have multiple children with multiple languages and dialects. You know, for example, even we see that the Shorewood School District has a very large population of, for example, Malaysian students. We see MPS has a huge population of Somalian, Karen. And so, you know, it's all these languages that we are so common, we are so used to, like you said, Spanish and, you know, some of the European languages, but as more and more people are coming into our city and into our country. We just, you know, and I see that as an asset. We get exposed to all these languages and all this beautiful culture that we didn't have access to before, either because we didn't know it existed or because we've never had, you know, to look it up. And so for me, that's one of the biggest benefits in doing this work, is that we get to highlight all this background that children bring with them, whether it's their language, whether it's the community that attaches to their language. And so bringing all of that into classrooms and exposing not only each other, but the rest of the school and our cities to this beautiful diversity, you know, to me, that's where we really make an impact in the world and in our cities, is highlighting that diversity in a positive way, ensuring that everybody has a seat at the table, regardless of your language or culture, and that we're embracing all of that, right? And that we're becoming, you know, this city and this state that is welcoming of all of those experiences in general, and that we're willing to learn from one another.
Tatiana, I can hear the passion and the emotion in your voice, and I wonder if that might in part be due to your own background, because you yourself came to Milwaukee speaking little, if any, English at what, about age 9 or age 10?
Yep, I was had just turned 10. We left from Costa Rica to Milwaukee. And I remember, you know, my dad lived in Milwaukee. He went back and forth. And when we decided to move the family, I remember talking to my dad on the phone, and he said, "Okay, honey, you're the oldest. I'm the oldest of two." He said, "You know, you're the oldest and you're the outspoken one out of the three of you." And so you need to remember these words as you are traveling through the airport. And I said, "Okay, I'm ready." And he said, "Okay, if you get stuck with anything, you need to know help, you need to know bathroom, and you need to know I am going to Milwaukee." And I said, "Okay, well, let me write that down," right? And so I became the spokesperson to travel from one country to the next with my mom and my sister and I. And so we moved here, and you know, I didn't know any English at all. One of the things that impacted and that really put me at the top, or that really helped me succeed, was that my teachers cared about my language and my culture. And so they built that environment of, you know, welcoming culture in their classrooms. And they worked with me to ensure that not only that I learned the language, but that I would stay or that I would learn content at the same time. So they provided content and books and instruction in Spanish. And then they taught me English on the side. So I spent a lot of recess, a lot of summer school, you know, just focusing on English instruction without having to worry about either learning content or either learning language, which is what happens in many of our classrooms today. As our population grows with English language learners, we're beginning to notice, I mean, and this is not new, but I think it's highlighted a little bit more, that many of our teachers and administrators and buildings are not ready to provide quality, just instruction, fair instruction for our English language learners. And so many times they focused on one or the other. Either you learn content, or either you learn English. And that's not how it works. We have to ensure that they can do both so that we don't leave them behind, right? Not knowing English should not be a handicap, or should not be something that is used against students. Because for many of our students, they bring a world of knowledge, either from prior schooling experiences. For example, I had, you know, kindergarten through fifth grade under my belt. So I knew content. And so this, my teachers focused on sustaining that content and then teaching English on the side, right? And so what I tell my teachers, my pre-service teachers, is how do we ensure that you can do both? Because you don't want to leave children behind.
Leanne, that's a wonderful story, Tatiana, and I want to switch to Leanne and ask this question. Hearing Tatiana's story, which is representative of thousands of kids' experiences coming in, how do you work with teachers, training teachers, who might not know those languages? I mean, just looking at the list of some of the languages spoken in Milwaukee schools, Rohingya, Swahili, Arabic, Laotian. What do you tell a teacher who's face-to-face with a student who may be very proficient in Arabic, but doesn't know even bathroom in English? What advice do you give that teacher?
Well, so this is our world, because we have in our teacher education program and in early childhood, and this is reflective about across the nation, in a lot of state universities, is we have 80% of our teachers that come through are female monolingual English speaking, and so we have a commitment to educating all our pre-service teachers to be ready for their classrooms of culturally and linguistically diverse students. And you may know the courses that you took in high school, Spanish or some of the more critical math languages, but we want you prepared for all children. And there's some things that we value greatly. One is that we teach our pre-service teachers that classrooms built on language and dialogue are the foundation for, and this a love for language, and really instilling in our pre-service teachers to love language and play with language. Secondly is talking to children about language. So you can be a teacher of bilingualism and biliteracy without knowing the child's language. You can make an incredible difference in a child's life by establishing an ethos in your classroom where home languages are welcome. And we do this through asking children about how they would talk about this at home, and welcoming it when children's home language comes through. I taught in a system that in Racine Unified School Districts that was dual language, where we the language of instruction was both Spanish and English, and we worked cross-linguistically. But for teachers who don't have that opportunity to know the language, understanding that when children experience school, they won't leave that at home, that they'll bring it with them, and inviting that in and inviting a celebration of language in the classroom, making sure that the classroom libraries have that language. There are community resources and university resources and district resources that you can establish that. But giving pre-service teachers the confidence to say, even though I don't know that language that a child comes to school with, I can be an effective teacher of biliteracy by valuing what the child brings in, by using my resources around me, by advocating for children when we know assessments aren't equitable, when we know initiatives aren't considering home languages other than English, that we have the agency to make sure that we work for that for kids. So it's very realizable to create a teaching force that understands this work. And if we're very critical in our theoretical and our conceptual work within the classroom, but yet we prepare students through field work, most of our early childhood courses are attached to field work, and we deliberately and purposefully make sure that field work includes work with populations of students whose home language is one other than English. And it's not just early childhood, but many of our other programs, certification programs, do that as well. So it is very realizable, and it's exciting to know that we can come out of our silos of knowledge and we can be monolingual English speakers and make an incredible difference in the biliteracy and bilingual trajectory of students.
That's great. That's mm-hmm. great. You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in our home studios in this day of COVID is Tatiana Joseph. Tatiana is an assistant professor of teaching and learning, and she's chair of UWM's second language education program. And also with her, Leanne Evans, associate professor of teaching and learning. She's chair of the early childhood education program, getting that next generation of teachers mm-hmm. ready for the classroom. Tatiana, as you think about the experiences of a student walking into the classroom this fall, and who knows exactly what those classrooms will look like, whether it's in person or virtual. I guess it will be all over the place over the next several months. Tell me what the family of those students are thinking as that student is beginning to learn English. Imagine a young girl or a young boy from El Salvador who finds himself here in Milwaukee without speaking English. Are parents supportive generally? Are they fearful of sending their child off to a school setting where their own native language won't be spoken? Talk about what's going on on the home front with these kids.
Yeah, so I can't speak for all parents, but I can share a little bit of, you know, the experience of my parents as I, you know, ask them now. I love to ask them, what were you thinking when we came here? Because it's a different perspective from that of a 10-year-old and what's in my head processing that as a 10-year-old. And, you know, the similarities that I find when I speak with other parents who are in that same space, you know, it's nerve-wracking. You're coming into a school system that is very much different from the school system in back home, back in their home countries. They are attempting to maneuver a system that is predominantly in English. In many districts, you know, translation is via a phone system, where you have to go in and you have to let somebody know that they need to dial the language line. And then you have to wait on the phone, right, for somebody to pick up. And then you can start your discussion with that person about what you need. It's also even maneuvering that space. I mean, I remember going with my parents to MPS central office, and we got lost because we didn't know where anything was. And so all of that becomes, you know, just very overwhelming for families who now have to rely on their children to translate sometimes, and then on other people to find appropriate resources to translate and provide information in their native language. And then we also have a large population of our refugee families, who are many of them coming from, you know, refugee camps, who have very extremely limited experiences with any of this, right? And they require more assistance and more attention. And so, you know, something that, you know, I speak about the Milwaukee Public School experience because that's what I'm most familiar with. But something that they've done is they've created mobile stations in communities so that parents don't have to venture out of their communities, which is another scary thing for families who may not know the city or have transportation. So they can go into these community hubs and then enroll and request information. And many of the times, the people who work there speak the languages in that community and are able to provide paperwork in that particular language. So I think we're moving in the right direction to ensure that we can serve families as well. That also has to extend into the classrooms, like Leanne was talking about, right? And creating those spaces where families feel welcomed. So, for example, think about even parent-teacher conferences. You know, if you have 41 languages spoken in your building, mm-hmm. how are you going to ensure that all of those parents will have an opportunity to sit with the teacher and ask the same questions? So it takes a village, right? I mean, it takes a village to ensure that children and families are part of our system.
You know, as you describe the experiences that these people have, many of them just with their native language and no English skills, I'm having flashbacks to some of the travels my wife and I have had in different parts of the world where we didn't speak any language. And in a couple of countries, nobody around us was speaking any English at all. And the looks that we were getting and the resulting confusion and even frustration on our part that, what do you mean?
Right?
Where is the bathroom, right? I just can't imagine that multiplied dozens or hundreds of times in a given week for these families and the young students as they try to navigate through the system. It's amazing that so many of them end up doing as well as they do.
Right, exactly. I mean, in our families, learn mechanisms for survival, right? We also have children. I mean, in my case, I had to learn, I feel like I was pushed to learn English quickly because I was the oldest and my parents relied on me. So I did. I learned English extremely fast. It wasn't very good, but it was, you know, enough. And so I became my parents' accountant, secretary, you know, any of the things that you do for yourself, they had to rely on me who spoke the most English to do. And so, but again, our families find ways to thrive and survive.
Leanne, I have to ask you, as you prepare the next generation of the teachers that are going to be going into these bilingual classrooms or multilingual classrooms, do you ever find the students, after they have some field experience, interested in learning more languages? Is that an encouragement for young teachers today to say, hey, I want to be better equipped to be able to serve as that navigator for people with little or no English skills?
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. And they'll often ask for resources for that. But I would like to say that beyond that, I think what happens is a transformation of understanding that beyond it at a linguistic sort of level, this is all contextualized in a social, historical, political context that we can't ignore when we're developing teachers to go into classrooms to work with students. And their understanding is that often for children, the experience is that learning English becomes very high stakes around assessments and the things that are expected of students that puts an extra layer on students that isn't necessarily, it works kind of against the visions of equity that we have in school. And our pre-service teachers learn that there's a marginalization that happens and that students get excluded from certain tracks or because you need assistance with a learning disability, you're removed from your bilingual education, and wherein your human right is to have both those, right, as a child going through the educational experience. So I think what we notice a lot when we, Tatiana and I have worked on what we call the critically conscious teacher preparation framework. When we work on these types of things that are very dispositional, that for us is the reward, because when teachers can go into that and impact students, how they feel about themselves, how these youngsters feel about themselves, and moving away from those deficit paradigms that reveal themselves in classrooms in many ways at many levels, and have great impact on how children see themselves as learners. So yes, we love when pre-service teachers get an interest in the linguistic piece and want to do that. But beyond that, it's really very important to us that that we are instilling this understanding about the ways in which the world works in ways that aren't equitable for all students. And how can we become agents of change for that? And that's real, that's important to our work. And that's what brings us together. We met in our doctoral programs, our doctoral program at UWM, and have been kindred spirits around that since. And as we're speaking, I'm thinking we have some next phase things to do. For example, when you think about what might this critically conscious teacher preparation online framework look like? Because this is where we're at right now. And I just made a note to myself, talk to Tatiana about about where we can go there. Because how do we do this is a very critical question right now.
Sure. Ladies, we're out of town time, unfortunately. But thank you so much for a fascinating conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Tatiana Joseph, Assistant Professor of Teaching and Learning. She's head of the Second Language Education Program at UWM. And Leanne Evans, an Associate Professor and Chair of the Early Childhood Education Program, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. Well, that's all for this week. Take care, everybody. We hope you are doing well and staying healthy. And hey, here's a tip. Let's learn a few words in another language to help us make our community even more welcoming to all of those who are still just learning English. Take care, folks. We'll see you next week at the same time. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.